From the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, this is NIH Research Radio.
Welcome to the 56th episode of NIH Research Radio, with news about the ongoing medical research at the National Institutes of Health, the nation's medical research agency. I'm your host, Joe Belinfi, and coming up in this episode, how cognitive health is improving among older Americans, and a conversation about helping older adults prevent or delay diabetes. But first, how researchers have discovered a new battleground to fight viruses with vaccines. That's next on NIH Research Radio.
Attention swimmers, get out of the water! Everybody, out of the water immediately!
Dude, is that... It's a pair of thunder thighs. Big ones, too. That mom who's been swimming a lot with her kids must have lost them.
Whoa. I heard about this happening once up at Laguna.
Small step number 54. Play with your kids. It's just one of the many small steps you can take to get healthy. Learn more at www.smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Vaccines have led to many positive health outcomes, but many deadly viruses, such as HIV, still avoid the efforts of scientists to develop effective vaccines against them. Wally Akinzo reports on the discovery of a new battleground in this field.
Researchers at the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases have discovered a new battleground for viruses and immune cells, which could help researchers develop antivirus vaccines. Dr. Jonathan Udell, chief of the NIAID Cellular Biology Section, says an improved understanding of how the immune system operates during a viral infection is critical to designing successful antivirus vaccines.
What we're interested in is how the immune system recognizes viruses. The cells we're principally interested in are the killer T cells. These are the cells that go into an organ and find a virus-infected cell and typically kill it. And so there's lots of different ways to study it that we've done over the years. And there's a brand new way to study it that entails taking an animal, infecting it with a virus. The virus expresses a protein that you put in that's colored, so a microscope can see it. And then we take the animal and put it on a fancy microscope, and we watch how the virus-infected cells interacts with the cells that we're interested in, which are the T cells.
Dr. Udell and his colleague, Dr. Heather Hickman, focused on mouse lymph nodes, which are bean-shaped organs that contain a variety of immune cells and are distributed throughout the body. The researchers discovered that immune cells confront viruses just inside of the lymph node and not deep within these organs as previously thought. Dr. Udell discusses the significance of the study.
The significance is really basically starting to really put vaccine generation on a rational basis. The way vaccines have always been designed in the past is basically you take a virus and you either kill it or not. You make it weaker. You give it to an animal and you didn't have to really know the rules to get it to work. And these vaccines have saved hundreds of millions of people. But you didn't actually have to know anything about how they were working, or not very much. The infectious diseases that are left to develop vaccines for are the hard ones. Things like HIV, hepatitis C virus, malaria. And in all of those diseases, it's thought that the cells that we're interested in, these killer T cells, play an important role. And what you'd like to do then is to elicit the best T cell response you can. We think that it's important to do that you really know the rules for how it's working. So then you can actually design your vaccine to take advantage of those rules.
Dr. Udell says this is just a step, but researchers are a long way from coming up with a vaccine for viruses such as HIV and malaria. This is Wally Akinzo at the National Institutes of Health, Bethesda, Maryland.
With May just around the corner, and because May is Older Americans Month, we're looking at a couple of topics that touch older people. First, here's another report from Wally Akinzo. It's about recent findings from two NIH institutes showing how education is associated with cognitive health in later life.
Cognitive health has improved among older Americans, according to a study by the National Institute on Aging and the National Institute of Mental Health. Researchers compared the cognitive health of older people in 1993 and 2002. They found that higher levels of education were associated with better cognitive health. Dr. Richard Sussman, director of the NIA's Social and Behavioral Research Program, pinpoints some of the other possible factors within the improvement of cognitive health among the elderly.
The really interesting question is, what's causing this? Some of it may be the increase in education. I mean, older people are getting more and more educated. But there was also some suggestion within the data that improved treatment for stroke, heart disease, and vascular conditions might also be factors in the improvement. If that's true, that's also very good news because it shows that some fraction of cognitive impairment can be affected by interventions, by medical interventions, and by lifestyle interventions. There are other data that were not investigated in this particular study that have also shown that exercise is very good for the brain and for cognition.
Dr. Sussman feels that further analysis of how education, medications, cardiovascular health, and lifestyle affect cognitive functioning. This is Wally Akinzo at the National Institutes of Health, Bethesda, Maryland.
When we come back, an interview about helping older adults control diabetes.
Recent studies have shown that diabetes can be prevented, and the results are even greater with my patients over age 60. Losing a small amount of weight by getting some physical activity, 30 minutes, 5 days a week, and eating healthier has proven to be effective. Listen to the great results from one of my patients.
I had to learn how to change my way of eating because diabetes ran in my family, and I wanted to take control of it before I got it.
Having diabetes in your family and being overweight puts you at a higher risk for type 2 diabetes. These risks increase with age, which is why it is important to take your first step today.
There was a time I could not go from my basement up to my bedroom, but now I can, and that means a lot to me.
It's not too late to prevent diabetes. Join my patients who are taking small steps and gaining big rewards.
For more information on how to prevent type 2 diabetes, call 1-800-438-5383. This is a message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the National Diabetes Education Program.
Since May is Older Americans Month, we took some time to talk to Dr. Judith Fradkin. She's director of the Diabetes Division of the National Institute of Diabetes and Digestive and Kidney Diseases at the National Institutes of Health. We talked about diabetes among older Americans. Dr. Fradkin, how common is diabetes among older Americans?
Being older is a major risk factor for diabetes. And so the frequency of diabetes steadily increases as people get older. It goes up quite a bit after the age of 45. And after the age of 60, about 600,000 people will develop diabetes each year. And altogether, there are about 10.5 million people in the United States over 60 who have diabetes. About a third of them don't know that they have it because in the early stages, diabetes can be asymptomatic.
So say I am over 45, I'm getting there. What are some of those risk factors I should start looking for?
A family history of diabetes is very important. If you have a parent or a grandparent or a sibling who had diabetes, then you're at increased risk. Age itself is an important risk factor for diabetes. For women, if they had diabetes during pregnancy or gave birth to a large baby, that's an important risk factor. People who have high blood pressure or abnormal lipids are at increased risk of diabetes. And also many minority groups, African Americans, Hispanics and Latinos and Asians, are at increased risk. Being sedentary and being overweight is also a very important risk for type 2 diabetes.
Back to the older Americans, what are some of the serious complications of diabetes that older Americans might face?
For older Americans in particular, heart disease is a very important thing to think about because diabetes increases the risk of heart disease by 2 to 4-fold, And most people with diabetes will die of cardiovascular disease. But there are many things that people with diabetes can do to reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease. So it's very, very important to aggressively manage blood pressure and to control LDL cholesterol to lower the risk of cardiovascular disease in diabetes. Another important complication of diabetes relates to some of the organs that where diabetes affects some of the small blood vessels, and that includes the eyes and the kidneys and the nerves. And for preventing that, it's very important to control blood sugar. So this is why we talk about comprehensive control of diabetes, because when you have diabetes, there's so much that you can do to prevent yourself from developing the complications, but the control requires thinking not just about blood sugar, but also blood pressure and cholesterol.
You said that the diabetes complications, there are these complications, they're not inevitable. They can be delayed or perhaps prevented by some of these things you were talking about.
Absolutely. There can be huge reductions in diabetic complications by controlling these risk factors. So, for example, the risk of kidney disease or eye disease can be controlled, can be reduced by more than half if people control their blood sugar. Controlling blood pressure and blood cholesterol dramatically reduce the risk of cardiovascular disease. And also, even if you already have complications, there are things that you can do to slow the progression of complications. So it's important to be tested to see if you have complications. So, for example, people with diabetes need to get their eyes tested every year, because if people have the start of diabetic eye disease, either lowering blood pressure or sometimes laser photocoagulation can really tremendously preserve vision. Similarly, there's some medications as well as very strict blood pressure control that can really protect the kidneys when people start to show the first sign of diabetic kidney disease, which can be seen with some protein in the urine. So it's really important to annually get tested to make sure that if you're developing complications of diabetes, you're doing everything that you can to slow the progression of those complications.
Is there a way to maybe look at it in terms of there are ABCs of diabetes?
Yes, we talk about controlling the ABCs of diabetes, where A is the A1C. A1C is a blood test that tells you what your average blood sugar has been over the previous 3 months. So sugars can fluctuate quite a bit, when you test, say, a finger stick blood sugar. But this A1C test really tells you how well you've been controlled over the previous months. B is for blood pressure, and C is for cholesterol. And if you control those ABCs, you will markedly reduce the risk of developing diabetes complications. So we ask people, when they see their doctors, to say, what are my ABCs, what should they be, and what are we going to do to get them to where they should be? And many doctors will talk about things that you yourself can do to control your ABCs as the first line of therapy. So, for example, walking, being physically active, makes a huge difference for people with diabetes, because insulin works on the muscles to bring sugar into the muscles. And that's the main way that the body lowers the blood sugar, is by taking it up in the muscles and burning it. So when you're physically active and using your muscles, that helps your body to burn the sugar, and it makes the insulin that you have much more effective. So exercise is important for weight loss, but even above its effects on weight loss, it helps to control blood sugar and helps to make your own body's insulin, or insulin that you might be taking, work more effectively. A healthy diet is also very important. It's important to eat fruits and vegetables. It's important to try to get your carbohydrates through complex carbohydrates like whole grains, fruits and vegetables, as opposed to very short-acting forms that can cause rapid swings in blood sugar. It's important to eat a low-fat diet, both because that'll help prevent you from becoming overweight, but also because it'll help keep your blood lipids in a healthy range and may reduce the need for medication to control cholesterol. So much of managing diabetes is really what a person can do themselves. But then many people will also require medications. And if your doctor recommends that you be on medication to control your A1C or your blood pressure or your cholesterol, it's important to remember that once you get it into control, it's not going to stay in control unless you continue to take those medications. So this is a very long-term proposition. But these medications can really do tremendous things to help prevent the complications of diabetes. And many of the medications are now available as generics. So for people who have problems affording prescriptions, talk with your doctor about whether there's a low-cost version of the medication that you need available.
It's a lot of fantastic information. Are there ways that older Americans can find additional free resources, how to learn more about what we've talked about today?
We have a website, the National Diabetes Education Program website, which is at www.yourdiabetesinfo.org, or you can simply Google National Diabetes Education Program or Your Diabetes Info. Or you can call 1-888-693-NDEP. NDEP is for National Diabetes Education Program. NDEP is a joint effort of NIH and the Centers for Disease Control. In addition, Medicare has a lot of information on their website for people with diabetes, and Medicare has a lot of benefits that people with diabetes can access. And those include nutrition information counseling, as well as diabetes self-management education. These are really important tools that people should take advantage of, because learning about how to manage your diabetes will help you to do a much, much better job of taking care of yourself. And so it's really great that Medicare does now offer coverage for self-management training for diabetes.
Fantastic. Is there anything that you think we might not have covered or may have missed that you'd like to add?
Just that many people who have diabetes or at risk of diabetes aren't aware of it. About a third of diabetes in this country is undiagnosed, and there are another 54 million people in the United States who have prediabetes who, if they take steps to lose even 10 or 15 pounds and be more physically active, can dramatically reduce the risk of developing diabetes. To prevent diabetes, you don't have to get down to a normal weight. You simply have to make some improvements in your weight. So it's important to be tested. If you have the risk factors for diabetes, getting a fasting blood sugar to find out if your sugar is in the normal range or in the pre-diabetic range or in the diabetes range is very important to help you take the steps that can really help you lead a longer and more healthy life.
Thanks very much to Dr. Judith Fradkin, Director of the Diabetes Division at NIDDK. And that's it for this episode of NIH Research Radio. Please join us again on Friday, May 2nd, when our next edition will be available for download. I'm your host, Joe Belinfi. Thanks for listening. NIH Research Radio is a presentation of the NIH Radio News Service, part of the News Media Branch, Office of Communications and Public Liaison in the Office of the Director at the National Institutes of Health in Bethesda, Maryland, an agency of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.